This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Why we're watching the market for corporate bonds very closely today. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Junk bonds, high yield bonds, if you're feeling polite, have been a popular way to get some kind of return in an era where ambient interest rates have been so low. But sellers of junk bonds have had trouble in recent days finding buyers after one junk bond fund stopped giving money back to investors who wanted to sell. There's confirmation today that the CEO of that company, Third Avenue Management, is out. But beyond this one fund, let's get the background on why junk bonds ended up causing such headaches. Guy Labat is chief fixed income strategist at Janney Montgomery Scott in Philadelphia.
Right now, oil is trading at roughly $35 a barrel, which is down from, call it, $100 in the summer of 2014. And many high-yield companies, they earn their money by pumping oil out of the ground, metaphorically or literally. And as commodity prices have fallen more broadly, these companies have come into revenue pressure, and the bonds which these companies have issued, they've fallen in market value. And that's broadened and expanded eventually into the entire high-yield corporate market.
High yield. Some people call those junk bonds. So the Fed itself, the Federal Reserve, making this interest rate decision in a couple days, that's not the biggest factor here.
If you go throughout history, pretty much every time the Fed starts raising interest rates, a little bit after the first rate hike, say 6 months or 12 months down the road, the high yield or junk bond markets start to have problems. This time around, the issues are actually preceding the Fed rate hike. And because the high-yield market has become so much about commodities, drillers and miners, I think that's a little bit more of a unique situation this time around.
And is part of this ETFs, exchange-traded funds, that have become all the rage in the past couple decades?
So the story goes something like this. Commodities prices fall. Certain high-yield bond issuers are impacted. Investors in ETFs and other indexed mutual funds see losses, and they sell. And in order to provide those investors with their cash, the ETFs then have to sell a little bit of everything. So yes, they sell some lower quality energy bonds, but they also have to sell some higher quality industrial corporation double B rated bonds. And so the entire high yield market declines in value as a result of these prominence of these ETFs.
Interesting to see that dynamic in action. Guy Labat, chief fixed income strategist at Janney Montgomery Scott. Guy, thanks for the briefing here.
My pleasure. Thank you, David.
And this morning, the oil market is tumbling again. Crude in New York was just over $35 a barrel, down about 1%. And natural gas was the cheapest in 13 years amid the big weird hot weather spell they have in the East. All countries will now have to publicize and stick to plans to cut the emissions of gases linked to climate change now. That's the essential result of the UN's climate change summit that concluded this weekend in Paris. But do they really have to stick to this? Marketplace's European correspondent Stephen Beard is here with more. Morning to you, Stephen.
Hello, David.
So people have had a few days to digest this agreement now. For those hoping this deal actually works as intended, should we ruin the party by mentioning that it's not all that binding?
Well, it's partly binding. I mean, once the signatory countries ratify it, there's a big question about that happening in the US, but if they do, it becomes overall binding on them. But there's a lot of voluntary stuff in this agreement. Countries, for example, can decide how much they're going to cut their own emissions. And the precise level of financial aid that each country gives to the developing world is also voluntary. Critics say this is a major weakness, but supporters, like Britain's climate change and energy minister Amber Rudd, say it's not perfect, but in a world of sovereign nation states, it's the best we could hope for.
What we've got is the political will here. The countries have agreed to do this. They have to come forward with the proposals. And what you saw at the conference over the past few weeks was the support from civil society, from NGOs, and critically from businesses who are going to help to pay for this.
But none of this is free. There's the issue of cost, ongoing and with large numbers.
Businesses, consumers and taxpayers will have to pay for this. And it isn't going to be easy. I mean, the world currently emits some 46 billion tons of greenhouse gases. The plan under this deal is to reduce that to almost zero within the next 50 years.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Thank you for this.
Thank you, David.
Today is peak mail day, M-A-I-L, as in the busiest mailing day of the year for cards, letters, packages. And that's according to the U.S. Postal Service. In recent years, the USPS has struggled with massive changes in the way we send things. This accounting year, the Postal Service recorded a $5 billion loss, Marketplace's Noel King reports.
The Postal Service makes most of its revenue, around $30 billion in 2014, from first-class mail. Rick Geddes is a professor in the Department of Policy Analysis and Management at Cornell.
The volume of first-class mail peaked out in 2001 and has been declining ever since, and now I think it's declined by well over one-third.
Fewer letters are being sent, but more parcels are because of online shopping. This year, the Postal Service projects it will deliver 600 million packages between Thanksgiving and New Year's Eve. And parcels are a different ballgame than letters. John Callen is managing director of Ursa Major Associates, a postal and parcel consultancy.
Even if you think about your mailbox, it's one thing for putting a fistful of letters into a mailbox. If you got to put a parcel in there or take it to the front door, that's a higher cost.
From the mailbox, where parcels often don't fit, to the front door, then back to the post office if there's no one home, it's just more hours logged. I'm Noel King for Marketplace.
And it's confirmed this morning, Newell Rubbermaid is buying Jarden Corporation for about $13 billion in cash and stock. Rubbermaid makes trash cans, Levelor blinds, Elmer's glue. Jarden owns nearly everything else innocuous, from Nook baby pacifiers to Yankee candles. I want to pass along what comedian John Oliver said about the deal. Quote, essentially, Jarden makes anything that you would find left behind after a burglary. From studios at Montclair State University in New Jersey today, I'm Dave Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.